Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Well, you know, your siblings can have a profound effect on your life. And today we'll explore the relationship between Mary Todd Lincoln and her sisters. Jennifer Chiaverini back with us. Her new book is Mrs. Lincoln's Sisters. Jennifer is a New York Times bestselling author of a number of historical novels, including Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, the Elm Creek Quilt Series. She calls Madison home. So it's great to have her with us again today. So what do you like about historical fiction? Do you have questions about the Todd family, about Mary Todd Lincoln? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Jennifer Chiaverini, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, you've been writing about Mary Todd Lincoln and the people around her for some time now, and I've read all of those novels and found them fascinating. What is it about her that you find so intriguing? What got you interested in her?
Well, I've always enjoyed writing about American history, especially famous women or women who perhaps deserved more fame, but whose stories went untold. And Mary Lincoln was certainly very controversial in her day. She was in this very unusual position. She was the first wife of a president to really be known by the title of First Lady. And she came into her position at an incredibly difficult and fraught time for the United States. And her position was particularly difficult because she was married to the president of the Union, and the commander-in-chief of the Union Army. Later, you know, as the war started after Abraham Lincoln took office, but she herself came from a slaveholding family from Kentucky. So she was really more Southern in her heritage. And then she, you know, her husband became president and she came to Washington, D.C., expecting to be at the pinnacle of society and just in a wonderful position to support her husband and also to rule as the queen of society. But that did not happen for a number of reasons, but one of the most significant ones were that she was not trusted by either side. The Northerners, with whom she had more political affinity, did not trust her because she came from a Southern slaveholding family. And later, some of her relatives would serve in the Confederate forces, and some of them would be married to Confederate officers. So even though Mary was a staunch abolitionist and was very much supportive of the Union, people in the North didn't trust her. And on the other hand, people in the South did not trust her either because of her professed beliefs and her support for her husband's position, but also because they thought that she had betrayed her Southern heritage by siding with the Union and marrying as she did. So Mary swept onto the scene expecting to be respected and admired and found herself really enduring quite the opposite. And now as part of it was, you know, she made some unfortunate choices with her spending and with some of her social activities and with her not always appreciated tendency to speak her mind. So, you know, some of it was direct response to things that she did, but a lot of it was just because no one quite knew where to place her. So the instinct was to distrust.
Yeah, she was a really fascinating person. Your book, it follows two timelines. You've got 1875, after the trial to have Mary declared insane, and then the years leading from childhood through the assassination of President Lincoln. And to me, learning about her family was really interesting. And her sisters, it's such an interesting family. And I love the fact that you started, you have those two timelines so that we could see how the relationships developed, how she developed as a person and how the relationships developed among her and her sisters.
Well, that's how I originally came up with the idea for writing this story. When I was writing Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker quite a few years ago, I was focusing on the character of Elizabeth Keckley, who was a former enslaved person who was a very skilled dressmaker. She managed to earn her freedom because of the earnings and because of the relationships she cultivated with her customers. And then she came to Washington, D.C., where she very soon became the most prestigious dressmaker that all of the elite ladies went to get their wonderful gowns made. And so after Mary came to Washington, she knew to try to improve her social stature, she needed to have the best wardrobe. And so that is how she became acquainted with Elizabeth Keckley, who soon became not only her dressmaker, but her confidant and friend. And while Mary was in the White House, she did face a number of terribly traumatic events. But there were two in particular that drew me to eventually writing Mrs. Lincoln's Sisters. And the first one was the tragic death of her young son, Willie.
Yeah.
Mary was absolutely devastated by the loss of her son to illness, as was Abraham Lincoln. Mary was so upset and bedridden, and she could not even leave her room, constant keening and weeping. And a lot of her care fell to Elizabeth Keckley. But when time passed and she still could not even get out of bed, Robert Lincoln, Mary's eldest son, summoned her eldest sister, also named Elizabeth, to come from Springfield, Illinois, to look after Mary. And between the two Elizabeths and some other friends, they eventually helped Mary work through the early stages of her grief until she was able to emerge from her room and begin to assume some of her ordinary daily activities. And then eventually, after some months, her eldest sister, Elizabeth, returned home to Springfield, Illinois. And then, of course, a few years later, that second incredibly devastating event took place, and that was the assassination of Mary's husband right before her eyes. We tend to think of it as this remote historical event, but if you look at it from Mary's perspective, her beloved husband was murdered right before her eyes. And I think all of us can really understand how shocking and traumatic that would have been. To Mary, this was not a remote event out of history. It was trauma that she experienced. And again, she went through this terrible grieving process. But I noticed one curious fact. Elizabeth Keckley, again, took care of Elizabeth and was looking after her and helping her to try to work through this terrible grief. But this time, Robert Lincoln did not summon her sister, her eldest sister, to come and look after her as well. And I knew there had been some estrangement over some just disagreements about something a niece said in the letter and this kind of quarrel and this little thing. But if ever there was a time for reconciliation within a family, you would think that this would be it.
Yeah.
And yet Elizabeth Edwards did not come to the White House, nor did any of Mary's siblings. And in fact, when Mary had to leave the White House and she returned to Illinois, she didn't go to Springfield. Now, she attributed that to just not wanting to go back to the scene of places where she had had so many happy memories with her husband and her lost son. So she went to Chicago instead of back to Springfield. But why didn't her sisters go and see her there? And in fact, it was Elizabeth Keckley who was her companion and who looked after her and who put her own thriving business in Washington aside in order to fulfill what she saw as her duty to President Lincoln to look after his distraught widow. She saw that as part of her service to her country. So, but it didn't really, exploring that question didn't really fit within the scope of Mrs. Lincoln's dressmaker, but the question lingered in my imagination for a long time, because this is when you need your family most, when you go through this kind of tragedy. And yet I didn't see the rallying around Mary that you might have expected. So I remain curious about that. And as so often happens with my books, it's wanting to satisfy my curiosity about some kind of unanswered question from history that compelled me to write this book, to see if I could figure out what happened and why they didn't all come together.
Well, it's a fascinating, fascinating story, and I'm really glad that you wrote it. I've fully enjoyed reading it and hearing about her family and how the things you were just talking about came to be and why they came to be. And I'm interested in hearing, maybe having you talk a little bit about her early stages. You tell the story sort of chapter by chapter through the eyes of four sisters, Elizabeth, who you mentioned, Frances, I think that was the next oldest sister, Anne had sort of followed Mary in line, and Emily was a very younger half-sister. But that whole family relationship was really fascinating to me.
It was to me, too. And there, I did choose those four women to be my narrators, as well as Mary herself. But she had many siblings and many half-siblings, so really I could have chosen a completely different slate of narrators. But these were the ones I decided to focus on. And you said earlier that our sibling relationships really do shape us throughout our lives, for better or for worse. And that is something that I definitely saw manifest in the story of these sisters. And one of the things about the Civil War is that we often hear that, you know, it's brother against brother. But really, if a family divided along political lines, no one could escape the conflict. And in a nation where families were indeed torn apart by whether they decided to go with the Union or with the Confederacy, that was just encapsulated within the Todd family. Some of Mary's, well, of course, Mary herself was very strongly Union, and she was married to the president. And some of Mary's brothers, some of her siblings or her brothers-in-law supported the Union, served in the Union forces, or served in the Lincoln administration. But on the other hand, she also had a number of siblings that fought for the Confederate Army or who were married to Confederate officers. So within this one large family, we see the divisions that were absolutely tearing the nation apart during this war. And I wanted to focus on how Mary, you know, we see a lot about what happened to Mary when she is already married to Abraham Lincoln, but I wanted to follow the threads of all of these sisters' lives, how they were as children and how they were as young women, and how it shaped the woman that we know as the First Lady. And I think a lot of people aren't really as aware that Mary really was quite a fascinating woman for her time. She was known as quite a belle, both in her hometown of Lexington, Kentucky, but also in Springfield, Illinois. She was very well educated for a woman of her time. She spoke fluent French. She was very politically savvy, coming from a prominent political family. She loved to dance. She was known as a witty conversationalist and was just had a lot of admirers and was really, you know, just one of the most most charming women of both of her hometowns. But one of the things that I thought was interesting, or I really enjoyed reading about the sisters when they were younger, was how they all helped one another when it became very important for them to find husbands, because that was something that women of their class and gender and of their era had to do. They it was expected of them to marry and to marry well, and that was how they would support themselves as they as they grew to adulthood. And Elizabeth, as the eldest, was the first to marry. And with her new husband, she went off to his hometown of Springfield. And then she recognized that it was her responsibility to help her younger sisters, one after the other, to meet lots of eligible young men and to make good marriages. And I enjoyed researching and writing about this part of the sisters' lives, because it showed them working together. Yes, there were occasional rivalries, especially between Mary and Anne. They were very much alike, and they were often at odds. But I liked that they saw that there was this kind of, we're in this together. We need to help each other out. Let's see that everyone, their future is secured. And if they can find true love along the way, that is even better.
Oh, I want to talk some more about that. Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today, she is the author of many books. The latest, the one we're talking about today, is titled Mrs. Lincoln's Sisters, a novel. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. Join in with your own conversations at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Right here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining in today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Jennifer Cheverini, author of a number of excellent books. And her latest is fascinating to me, and I'm sure it will be to you. It's titled Mrs. Lincoln's Sisters. Join in with your own questions, comments at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And just before we go to the phones, we've got some callers online. I want to go back to the business of the sisters, especially Elizabeth, helping her sisters to get married. It was fascinating to me. I think it was Frances, wasn't it, who dated Abe Lincoln at least a few times?
Yes, that was probably the most surprising fact that I discovered in my research, that Mary was not the first of the Todd sisters to catch Abraham Lincoln's eye. It was actually Frances, an older sister, younger than Elizabeth, who was first to go to Springfield, and she kept hearing all this talk about this brilliant Abraham Lincoln, and she wanted to meet him. And they did do a little bit of courting. They would talk at social events, and they would attend lectures. And Frances, however, she recognized the brilliance of his mind and the inherent goodness and compassion of his heart. But Francis just couldn't get over his lack of polish. Yeah. You know, he was self-educated. He was poor. He was, you know, a backwoods Kentucky, you know, woodsman. And he didn't have those little niceties that one expects of a gentleman. He didn't attend to those little romantic trifles that really warm a girl's heart. So Frances just really fell in love with him, and, you know, and they were still friends, but it just didn't really, if there were sparks, they didn't really catch fire. Now, Mary, on the other hand, although of course she liked polish and culture and romance as much as anybody, she really recognized something else in Abraham Lincoln that her sister didn't see. And she really saw that and fell in love with him in a way that Frances did not. Now, this was upsetting to Elizabeth and Elizabeth's husband, because they were astonished that she was not, that she could possibly even consider marrying someone who was so beneath them in social status. And they tried to discourage Mary from marrying Abraham Lincoln. And it was true, their courtship was on again, off again. But Mary, when she wanted something, she went after it. And she really wanted to marry Abraham Lincoln.
And the interesting, one of the other interesting points about that was, I think, I don't remember her age. Was it 6 or 9 years of age? She said, I'm going to marry a president.
That's absolutely right. And it astonished, I mean, she was very precocious, very bright from a very young age and very outspoken. And if she had been born 100 years later, maybe she would have thought about assuming political office herself. But that was not really an option that Mary could consider in her position. So the highest place her ambition could reach would be to be married to the president and living in the White House and ruling in that way. So from the time she was a childhood, she said she was going to marry a president and live in the White House. And when she was a young woman courting, that was a very important criterion for any young man that she would even consider. He might be brilliant and wealthy and polished and wonderful to be with, but if she did not see that potential in him to someday be president, then she would not let the relationship progress any more. And sometimes her sisters teased her about this. But it was astonishing to everyone that she eventually did manage to make this happen. She did fulfill this childhood dream.
Well, let's take some calls. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Fascinating. Richard in Two Rivers, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I've always found their relationship fascinating, and I always try to study relationships from where I went wrong on the ones in my past. And I have a simple question. It's I want to have your guest speaker. What's your name again?
Jennifer Cheverini.
Yeah, Jennifer. I want her opinion on, I mean, Mary was obviously mentally ill. And of course, they couldn't diagnose it at that time. But I want to know, in her Jennifer's opinion, whether she feels that her mental illness was part of, you know, a chronic disease, or was it part of the stress of having a wonderful husband that has an idealistic idea to run the country? That's a simple question. That's all I need an answer for.
All right. Thank you for calling. Jennifer?
Thank you for the question. Thank you for the question. And yes, the book does explore Mary Lincoln's mental illness. And that is, in fact, her suicide attempt and her commitment to a sanatorium about 10 years after her husband was assassinated does form the crux of the story. And I think it's important for us to keep in mind. So first you asked, is it part of a physical disease or is it the trauma she experienced? And I would say it's a combination of both. And of course, I am not a medical expert. I'm relying upon what other historians and medical experts have read and have concluded, having never actually diagnosed Mary herself, but based upon evidence in the historical record. Mary Lincoln suffered a great deal of trauma in her life. I mentioned the death of one son and the assassination of her husband, but Mary actually buried 3 of her 4 sons. So only one of her beloved children outlived her. She also lost her mother when she was very young. And in fact, it was Elizabeth who acted as a mother figure to her. And so compound that childhood trauma, the loss of her mother. Her father remarried within a year, and the stepmother did not like Mary. Mary was outspoken and bright and precocious and did not always keep her place to her stepmother's great irritation and vexation. So she was sent away to school, the only child to be sent away to school. Now, this worked out well for Mary because she did get a wonderful education. But on the other hand, she lost her mother and then she was sent away. And that feeling of not being loved, that fear of abandonment, really went with her throughout her life. And Mary experienced this trauma as a young girl, and of course the trauma she experienced as a young mother and as a wife, without any of the benefits of psychotherapy and medications and the understanding of psychology that we have today. There was some understanding of psychology, but not at all as we have it now. And think about how there is, very regrettably, still some stigma attached to mental illness even today. Back in Mary's day, it was so much worse. And it was very difficult for women, too, especially, because so often they were just believed to be making it up. It was all in their heads. And when it was in their heads, it was not. It was not their psychology. They just wanted attention or something. So they had a lot of difficulty, not only Mary, but lots of women. They had a great deal of difficulty being heard by medical experts and having their concerns taken seriously. And then, of course, when they were taken seriously, the treatments were sometimes very ineffective, sometimes quite good for the day, but sometimes worse than, in some ways, worse than the illness. Mary was, because of her privilege and because of her wealth and her status as the former first lady, she went to a very nice place. She had loving attendants and learned physicians helping her, but most people were not that fortunate. They went to places that were just very alarming, and they didn't get the medical treatment. And Mary did manage to avoid that, but so many other women did not. Yeah. So there was certainly a lot of trauma. There were, and many historians and physicians of our day will diagnose a number of different things. Some people say she had manic depressive disorder, and other things come up frequently as well. But she certainly had a lot of untreated trauma. And another theory that has come out is that from a physical standpoint, her psychological issues were compounded by untreated diabetes, because so many of her symptoms that she claimed to suffer just fell right into that category. They could be explained by diabetes. So, you know, not being a medical expert myself, not having that background, from what I have read, that seems to me to be a plausible explanation for Mary's situation later in life.
I'm trying to remember. I thought I read in your book that there was some family history, a grandfather who had trouble.
Yes, indeed. There were other family members who had to, like Mary, had to be committed, and the family covered it up. And this goes back to the idea of the stigma of mental illness. So growing up, they were told he died of consumption or of this illness. But she had a brother who was a severe alcoholic. And then, so there was a history of mental illness in the family, but it was kept as secret as they were able to manage, just because it would have affected marital prospects for siblings and children. It would have affected professional opportunities. So there was this sense of shame that went along with having a diagnosis of mental illness yourself, or having that with someone in the family. And unfortunately, that, I believe, interfered with Mary receiving adequate treatment. The stigma was so strong that some well-meaning, I want to believe they were well-meaning, well-meaning people wanted to get Mary out of the care home where she was, out of the sanatorium where she was, away from the pressures of society, and she was receiving, you know, kind of nurturing activities and medical supervision, because the shock and horror of being locked away was so great that some people couldn't consider that maybe she was there and was benefiting from being in this home. Her son, Robert, who was the one who pursued having her examined to evaluate her sanity, he did not do it for any nefarious purposes. He was so concerned by her erratic behavior that he was deeply afraid she was going to harm herself or she would be taken advantage of by unscrupulous people in her infirmity. So, but other people thought that it was so dreadful that she was away behind locked bars and iron grates on the windows, which was not at all an accurate description of the place where Mary was, that they took her case to the press to talk about how badly she was being treated and what a cad Robert Lincoln was for having this done to his poor mother, that eventually the pressure was so great that she was released and sent to, and she went to go and live with Elizabeth. And, I have to wonder if she had been left alone to try this process of healing at a safe place away from the pressures of society and the lingering press and all of those other issues, maybe she would have been able to have a fuller recovery that would have led to better health and maybe a longer, happier life. But of course, we'll never know, unfortunately.
Yeah. And the people who may have been well-meaning, a husband and wife, I've forgotten their names now, Breckles, Brichelles, I've forgotten now. Anyway, the result of some of that was to really turn her against Robert.
Yes, and that is very unfortunate. Because he has been, unfortunately, he has been accused of just absolute malice towards his mother, of being cold and indifferent and wanting her money. Well, Robert had been quite successful in his legal career. He had his own money. He was not after his mother's. And he was concerned for her. I mean, everything that I've read, it leads me to that conclusion, that he was concerned for her harming herself or being taken advantage of by people who, would press an opportunity to make a quick buck or take advantage of her position. And a lot of people recognize that. A lot of Robert's contemporaries realized that he was acting in her best interest and that it was really a thankless role he took on.
But it sure
sanity,
was.
Indeed it was. I mean, at the sanity hearing, Mary was just devastated, and she just accused Robert of betraying her, which truly must have been heartbreaking for him. I honestly believe that if he had thought he had any other choice, he would not have done this. But the visions that Mary had been describing, the unusual behavior that she had been partaking in, it really alarmed him, and he wanted to see that she was cared for and brought back to reason, as they put it. But she really intensely resented him for that. After she was at Bellevue Place, and she was starting to, those initial terrible symptoms were starting to recede a bit, she did feel more kindly toward him. She did start to see that, he was acting in her best interest. He did love her, and things were going to be better. She just had to improve. But then the other people who thought they were, who were against what Robert had done, they corresponded with her and got her more agitated and started telling her, you know, Robert has really treated you horribly. And the more she heard that message, the more she believed it. And so Mary, too, began to clamor to be released from Bellevue, I think before she was really ready.
Yeah. Francesco and Sister Bay, what's on your mind?
I have read extensively on Lincoln, and one of the things that I learned was that it was Mary that lured her husband to the Ford Theater because Stanton wanted him dead because Lincoln was ready to hand over the Union to the South with his 10% enrollment to come back into the Union. Congress said no, and Congress said, you're too powerful, so we get rid of you the same way they got rid of Julius Caesar and the same way they got rid of JFK. Have you run into something like that?
Yeah. Mary was not, or there was not a conspiracy relating to Mary, was there?
In your mind? There are so many conspiracy theories about Abraham Lincoln's assassination and about John Wilkes Booth. And in fact, there was a very real conspiracy. You know, that there was a conspiracy first to kidnap Abraham Lincoln. That was the original plan. I wrote about this quite a lot in a previous novel, Fates and Traitors. John Wilkes Booth's original plan was to kidnap Lincoln, manage to escape with him to Richmond, Virginia, the capital of the Confederacy, and then hold him for ransom for all of the Confederate prisoners of war. But that was impracticable, and it was not. They tried to kidnap him, and it just never worked. And so then, of course, John Wilkes Booth decided that he just had to kill President Lincoln in order to avenge the South. And there was a conspiracy to kill other members of Lincoln's cabinet. And in fact, Secretary of State was already bedridden because of a carriage accident, but someone did get in and try and stabbed him and stabbed the secretary's son and almost killed him, but failed. And then someone else was supposed to take out Vice President Johnson. He just decided not to go through with it. And then someone else was supposed to take out Ulysses S. Grant, but he was on his way to out of Washington, so that didn't happen either. I have seen absolutely no credible evidence whatsoever to suggest that Secretary Stanton was in any way involved in any kind of plot to bring down Lincoln. And Mary certainly was not involved in any kind of plot. She loved her husband dearly. He was her world, as she very often said and wrote. And her very genuine grief after his death, I think, is very compelling evidence to prove that. You can't fake that much grief for that long, that well. So I absolutely don't believe that. But the thing that is important to know, too, is that although some, you know, the team of rivals, as the very wonderful book by Dolores Kearns Goodwin is titled, about Lincoln and his cabinet. If you read that book, and if you also look at Lincoln's secretary John Hay's books and diaries and correspondence, they all, when Lincoln came in and he was assembling his team of rivals to run the government and try to hold the country together and then repair it after that split came, they were all educated men. They were polished and savvy and came from, most of them, we had these outstanding pedigrees. And a lot of them thought that they were superior to Abraham Lincoln in many ways. But once they met him and once they were working with him, people in the cabinet attest to the fact that it did not take long for them to realize he was the best among them. And many of them just genuinely came to love him dearly. And Stanton was one of those. So I do not believe that he wanted Lincoln dead and certainly would not have taken any actions to participate in that.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that call, Francesco. And boy, here we are out of time. Jennifer, you have a fascinating book once again. I really enjoyed reading it, and I hope you sell a bunch of copies.
Well, me too.
Are you working on something else now?
Have
you started another book?
I have started another book, and it's well underway. I don't have a title for it yet, but it'll be coming out next year right around this time. And it focuses on the women's suffrage movement in the United States in the early 20th century. And I have chosen three narrators that I think and I hope that my readers will find as fascinating as some of the women I've explored, whose lives I've explored in my earlier books. And this would be Alice Paul and Ida B. Wells Barnett and Maud Malone. So those are the three narrators of my forthcoming book, which when I have a title for that, I'll have it all up on my website.
Well, we'll be talking to you then, I'm sure. Jennifer, thank you so much. Again, I enjoyed your book, and I look forward to talking with you again. Thanks for being with us today.
I look forward to it, too. Thank you very much.
Jennifer Chiaverini's new book is called titled Mrs. Lincoln's Sisters. Wonderful novel, and I hope you have a chance to look at it. We are going to continue kind of a little bit on the history side here. Wisconsin has many wonderful historical sites. We haven't been able to visit them, but they're going to reopen, some of them at least, soon. And we'll learn more about that next year on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.